Whether you've acted professionally or never been on stage in your life, you are welcome here. Whether you've never been to therapy or you go every day, you are welcome here. Whether you can barely improvise dinner or you freestyle great speeches, whether you struggle with a mental illness or you just glide through life with no stress at all, whether you'll participate in every exercise today or sit there shaking your head no and glaring, you are welcome here.
Good morning. I am Kathy Hedge, and we are the Fellowship of the Unitarian Universalists. We meet to express our individual beliefs and religious convictions. We grow, heal, and learn together. We belong to the national organization, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations, and are members of the UUA Prairie Star District. The Unitarian Universalist Association has no creed, no prophet, or sacred book, but we agree on seven principles that are listed on the back of your bulletin. Visitors, you are invited to join us after our service for refreshments, and today, our treats are provided by Harriet Yonke, Elka Lorenz, Ruth Friedman, and Sarah Broman. I hope I pronounced that right. Stacy, I'm sorry. If you are new to the fellowship or you have a guest that you would like to introduce, you are welcome to do so, but please wait for the microphone. So do we have somebody? Oh, I know we have one person to introduce.
This is Monica Finney. You want to introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. My name is Monica Finney, and I'm in the drama therapy program at K-State. I'm here to help out Catherine today.
Do we have any other guests who'd like to introduce themselves? Yes, back here, please. Oh, here comes the microphone right here.
Hi, I'm Amy Hilgendorf, and my husband and I, we moved here recently, earlier in the summer, from Madison, Wisconsin. I work in the College of Education at Kansas State.
Welcome. Anyone else? Thank you. Well, we have a lovely hymn today. It feels like a tango. And Marilyn is going to play it for us, and it's called Let It Be a Dance. Oh, and it looks like we have two gentlemen who are going to help us sing it. Thank you, fellows. It's hymn number 311. Please stand as you are able.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael and Dick. That was and Marilyn. Thank you very much. Please refer to your program. In there, we have any announcements that we may need to see.
This is a quote from Albert Einstein. I am enough of an artist to draw freely upon my imagination. Imagination is more important than knowledge. Knowledge is limited. Imagination encircles the world.
Our first reading is from The Story of My Life by Helen Keller, chapter 4. I'm not reading the whole chapter. The most important day I remember in all my life is the one on which my teacher, Ann Mansfield Sullivan, came to me. I am filled with wonder when I consider the immeasurable contrasts between the two lives which it connects. It was the 3rd of March, 1887, 3 months before I was 7 years old. On the afternoon of that eventful day, I stood on the porch, dumb, expectant. I guessed vaguely from my mother's signs and from the hurrying to and fro in the house that something unusual was about to happen. So I went to the door and waited on the steps. The afternoon sun penetrated the mass of honeysuckle that covered the porch and fell on my upturned face. My fingers lingered almost unconsciously on the familiar leaves and blossoms which had just come forth to greet the sweet southern spring. I did not know what the future held of marvel or surprise for me. Anger and bitterness had preyed upon me continually for weeks, and a deep languor had succeeded this passionate struggle. Have you ever been at sea in a dense fog, when it seems as if a tangible white darkness shut you in, and the great ship, tense and anxious, groped her way toward the shore with plummet and sounding line, and you waited with beating heart for something to happen? I was like that ship before my education began, only I was without compass or sounding line and had no way of knowing how near the harbor was. Light, give me light, was the wordless cry of my soul, and the light of love shone on me in that very hour. I felt approaching footsteps. I stretched out my hand, as I supposed to be my mother. Someone took it, and I was caught up and held close in the arms of her who had come to reveal all things to me, and, more than all things else, to love me. Now is the time we share those joys and concerns that make us who we are. Please wait for the microphone to be brought to you. Do we have some joys or concerns to be shared today?
Dave Lambert. Sometimes it pays to get here on time. I really appreciate the first hymn. I'm glad we were here on time. We were fortunate enough to be visited by Rick Mastin when we were at Corvallis, the UU Fellowship there. So he put on a tremendous performance for us, and 29 and a half years ago, this was one of the main songs at Sybil's and my wedding. So we really enjoyed singing the song.
That deserves an applause. Yeah. Well, my joy is that Michael Oldfather found that for us, and I think it was just perfect. So thank you, Michael.
Sorry. Sandy Nelson. I leaned over, as I do most Sunday mornings, and asked Lily, do we have any joys and concerns? And she always just looks at me with a kind of a roll of the eye. But this morning, she reminded me that our oldest daughter, Allison, who most of you don't know, has been in Turkey for the past month and a half. And today, she's back in the States in 3.5 hours. So we're joyous about that.
Jim Chantel. I guess I have a kind of a joy. I'm back. I've been gone for a while. I was in San Diego, sort of reliving my past, because that's where I went to school. That's where Doreen and I first had our married life together and so forth. My concern is in quite a different direction. My oldest daughter's, Karen, if I get this right, my oldest daughter Karen's father-in-law died while it was out there. They had the service this last week. It wasn't all that unexpected. He'd been sick for quite a while, but it's, of course, always a shock to the family.
I have a joy that my good friend, who isn't a drama therapy person but is a theater person involved in social action, Laura, and her two children, Gabriel and Alexia, hi, you're hiding, have shown up. They found the church. So,
slightly convoluted story. I went to Chicago last week, and I was able to get up on a train and take a boat ride, so that those were two victories. But besides that, when I came home, there was a big packet of papers from Catherine Schlagic at the Beach Museum, and she had seen an Eskimo painting of ours, and we, my husband and I, bought it in 2002 just because we liked it. And she said, I'm going to do research on this. And it turns out that the artist is a highly honored artist in Canada. So I'm kind of very pleased.
Stephen Ball, I have a grave concern. Jim and Barbara Bascom have returned from New Mexico. Welcome. The original... They're both physicians, so we call them our Unitarian paradox.
Well, thank you very much for sharing, and for all of those concerns that you left unspoken, we wish you ease. And now it is time for our special story that's going to be led by Catherine and Monica. So children, would you please come on forward? I think you'll really like this one.
So I'm going to need your help for this story, because without your help, it's not going to happen. So a long time ago, the sky had no stars in it. It was completely black. And the Earth Maker turned to the Heavenly Twins and said, go and put arrange stars in the sky. I want them arranged neatly, and I want them arranged organized and very precisely, so go and do it. So they took their big jar of stars, and they went, and they were going to arrange them all. And so Coyote, however, kind of trailed along after them, and we all know that Coyote is kind of he's a tricky guy. He likes to kind of mess around in things and mess them up sometimes. So the twins took a bunch of stars, and they put them up in the shape of Orion, which is a big constellation, and then they took some more. What else? What else can we make? The Big Dipper. So, do you want to come and help me make the Big Dipper? So, let's see. We have a star maybe here. Here? Do you want to put one up too? Good job. Is there any other constellations we need? Yeah? A roller coaster? Okay, come on and help me put the roller coaster. Let's take some stars here. I think I'm going to, yeah. Good job. I saw one more. The Little Dipper. Absolutely. If we have the Big Dipper, we need the little one too.
You can put it wherever you want it.
Good job. So I am tired. How about you? That was a lot of star arranging, and that's what the Heavenly Twins thought. And so they went, and they left, and they went down to rest. Well, that's when Coyote came up, and he looked at the sky, and he said, this is going to take forever. This is going to take forever to get all these stars up there. And suddenly he just had this urge. He had this creative spirit to just throw all the stars up. So that's what he did. Everyone help. He just threw the stars all around. Throw some over there. Throw some over there. There's not enough stars up in the sky. I need more stars. Throw them all up. All right, good job. And the Earthmaker said, this is messy. This is, what is this? But Coyote said he liked it better. And the people in the village, they agreed. They liked it better too. His creativity gave us the beautiful night sky full of stars that we see today. Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. Here's the list of what we have next. It was so exciting. All those stars were going everywhere. All right. This is from Theater of the Oppressed by Augusto Boal. In its most archaic sense, theater is the capacity possessed by human beings and not by animals to observe themselves in action. Humans are capable of seeing themselves in the act of seeing, in thinking their emotions, of being moved by their thoughts. They can see themselves here and imagine themselves there. They can see themselves today and imagine themselves tomorrow. This is why humans are able to identify themselves and others and not merely to recognize.
Today is our Helping Hands Sunday, when we invite local members of our local community, our action community, we ask their representatives to come and speak to us about their programs. And today, when we have our offertory, when we pass baskets around, the proceeds will go to the Flint Hills Community Clinic, unless you mark it that it's for UUFM. So we wanted to let you know, and we have a representative. We have Nurse Sue Ann Wright, who is the clinical nurse coordinator for the Flint Hills Community Clinic, and she's going to come to talk to us a bit about their program. So, Nurse Wright, thank you for being here today.
Well, I would start with thank you very much for your support. I think this is the third time that I've been here, and the support has been ongoing since the clinic opened 6 years ago. I've been there the last five of those. The second thank you I would have is for your support through volunteers, because I'm here today sitting with Betty, who has expanded our social work program immensely, like created it or helped us to the next level in that. And I understand that we have another volunteer starting on Monday in Yvonne, and we're excited about that. And then also Deirdre is here today, and she's one of the nurses who comes on Wednesdays. And that's the most important thing to know about Flint Hills Community Clinic. The outreach is fairly obvious. We take care of those who are have no insurance, and they fall beneath. We use the 200% of the federal poverty guideline. And that is about $10 and some an hour, but that would be if you were full-time supporting only one person. So understandably, anybody who's less than that for fewer than 40 hours or whatever. So, and I won't even, if I started on the walks of life that we take care of, I'd go way past my anointed time. So what donations, we mainly exist through volunteer help. There's myself, a director, and one part-time grant-funded nurse practitioner who's only there one afternoon a week. Other than that, our clinics are totally run by volunteers. Everybody who answers the phone, everybody who checks in patients, everybody who makes the rest of it work, board members, whatever, are all volunteer, and I think that's something that our community, that's a resource that I'm so very proud of. And somebody said that that's our job as coordinators, is to herd the volunteers. I've heard herding cats as it came in, but no, they're usually much more willing than that. So anyway, the other main support comes from Mercy Regional Hospital, who was in on the foundation, and then through the Ministerial Alliance, many of the churches in town are regular donors. Other than that, it's individual supporters throughout the community. We have accumulated in 6 years, we have 2,600 plus charts. We have seen that many individuals come through the door of our basement at 401 Houston. Last year was, I think, around 1,800 separate patient appointments. So in each month it's about 140. It can range around that. So what donations do is, even though Mercy is providing the lab, when those lab reports come over the fax machine, there has to be a fax machine, there has to be paper to print the report on, there have to be supplies for everybody to use. When the patients are checked in, there have to be thermometers, there have to be blood pressure cuffs, there have to be any medications that we send. We don't provide every single medicine, but when you have somebody come from the emergency shelter who's displaced for whatever reason, and there are many reasons, Betty can tell you that too, they may have absolutely nothing, so we can purchase their first set of medications. It's usually for a chronic disease that they've been on, and until they figure out how they're going to purchase the next ones. That's kind of it. Supplies and medications. We have, when the diabetics, we are able to provide diabetic testing strips for a nominal donation of $5. However, they can have them without the donation if they need them. And we have ladies who order medication through patient assistance, so $100 vials of insulin are available for free from the companies. And again, all of the support that all of these things are happening through volunteers, so it is very heartwarming to me that the community support it financially so that the volunteers can carry on their work. And the people are taken care of. Thank you very much.
All right. So today we're going to talk about drama therapy. And for what it is, drama therapy is a combination of drama theater and psychology. And it kind of works to use theater therapeutically. That could mean all kinds of things. That could mean going in and really uncovering very deep issues, or it could just mean providing quality of life. And so we're going to kind of talk about both sides of drama therapy today. And it's also really not kind of a new thing. A lot of the techniques we use are rooted in shamanism and other things like that, and Aristotle and John Bergman, who is doing, you can't see him, I wish I had his face blown up, but he's amazing. He's doing the keynote at the NADT conference this year, National Association of Drama Therapists Conference, and he's going to be talking about how drama therapy isn't really owned by anyone. It's based on kind of the electric current that happens between two people when they meet, interact with each other, and are able to see each other's experience. That's why I find that Boal quote so important for it. So we're going to kind of talk about a bunch of the populations that we do drama therapy with. So here is Monica Finney. She's going to talk about barrier-free theater and interactive theater for military teens.
All right. Well, the main thing I'm doing right now is the barrier-free theater, which has actually been around, I should have looked it up to find out exactly, but a couple of decades at least, before our current professor, Sally Bailey, took it over. And the barrier-free theater is funded by the Manhattan Parks and Rec Department, and then it takes place in the Manhattan Arts Center. And basically, the population that we serve there are adults with various developmental delay. So obviously, because of a lot of privacy issues, HIPAA, we don't actually know what a lot of the disorders are that people come in with. But there's just such a wide range of people, and they are all over 18, and there's a lot of people who are on the autism spectrum. And I see every single one of them get so much out of this program. It acts as a theater troupe, and so they come in the first semester of the year. They meet once a week, and they're doing a lot of activities. And we try to incorporate a lot of different art therapies. So sometimes we are storytelling, and they're able to act things out and practice real-life experiences. And a lot of the time, they are making posters and drawing things that they're feeling about that day, having check-ins and meditations and things like that. It's a fairly big group. There are probably about 30 participants from the community, and then we have about 10 to 15 Kansas State volunteers and other volunteers from the community that are there every week. So they lead small groups, and people get so much out of it. As Catherine was talking about, there's kind of a difference between actually working through specific issues and quality of life drama therapy. And I feel like this program really kind of acts as both, depending on who's participating. But I think that the biggest thing that people get out of it is that they are able to break out of their shell, especially a lot of the people with the social disorders come in and they've never really been able to know how to interact with other people. And theater is one of those things that really connects people together. So there's the aspect that through this creative drama, they're able to learn, practice real-life scenarios, if you will. There's also a program called Excel that takes place at Kansas State that I wish we had a representative from because I haven't been able to work there myself. But they work with the same sort of populations, and they use drama to act out scenarios. Like maybe one day the theme will be grocery shopping, and they will be able to just go through it and play out these things before they experience them in the real world. And then they might go out to a grocery store and put those skills into action. So there's a lot of drama therapy that is purely just learning those things that just takes you a little bit of extra time to learn. And then there's a lot of it that is coming in and being able to step outside yourself for a moment, be able to connect with people, and really be able to become yourself. So I see a lot of that with people at the Barrier Free Theater. And we constantly get parents and relatives and friends and group leaders from the group homes telling us what an amazing impact it has made in these people's lives. It's just wonderful to see them light up on stage in a way that you'd never see just interacting with them on a regular basis. So that's a really wonderful program. I would encourage any of you, if you would like to come out and check it out one day. We're very receptive to having people come in. It meets on Wednesdays from 4 to 5:30, starting in September. It goes the entire year, although we will take a break for winter break. But that's just in the Manhattan Arts Center on Wednesday afternoons. So the second semester, when we come back, the participants actually put on a show. So while they've spent the first semester brainstorming, coming up with all of the things that are of interest to them, for instance, last year, people had a very strong interest in relationships, and they really wanted to be able to work through relationships on stage. And we ended up with a play called Camp Bear Claw that was all about a camp and boys and girls learning to interact with each other at camp. So they kind of brainstorm and they decide the type of things that they would really like to play out on stage, what's really important to them. And then this year I'm directing, so I will go home and write a play based on their experiences. It will be a collaborative work of everybody in the troupe. And we come back, and the second semester is rehearsals. It acts just as any other theater rehearsal, and the structure is very, very much important for them. So that's, I think, probably most people's favorite part is actually going in and working really hard, working just very, very hard to put a play together. And then the play takes place sometime in April. So I will make sure that Catherine reminds everyone. We will make sure that everybody can come out and see it. It's really a great sight to see. They do. Tickets disappear very, very quickly. They're about $5, and it all goes to fund through the Parks and Rec, it goes to fund directly the Barrier Free Theater. And also, I put in a little call to action here. In second semester, we are always especially in need of volunteers with any particular skills that could help us in the area of costumes and set and construction, design, those sorts of things as well. The second thing I wanted to talk about is kind of another side of drama therapy, just to kind of give an overview. Another project I recently did was the Speak Out for Military Kids Interactive Theater, and it was in conjunction with the Operation Military Kids program, which is a national program for adolescents of military families. And so I was working out of Fort Riley, and these were all teenagers who didn't necessarily have anything else in common with each other except for the fact that their parents were in the military. And so these kids have come from kind of all walks of life, and they definitely come from all areas of the country, and some of them from overseas. So we had a wide range of people to work with. But this particular program worked as an acting troupe as well. However, this was also a practice in nonfiction theater. So all of these kids came in, and they were in charge of writing the play themselves. They had design jobs. They were to start from scratch with absolutely nothing and in an 8-week period put on a play. And this was all based on their experiences. So a lot of the therapy that took place in this program happened at the very beginning, as these kids came in who had never met each other before, and they sat around in circles a lot of the time and would just discuss the things in their life that they felt they really needed to express, things that they didn't feel like their parents understood, or things that they were feeling that they really needed to work through. A lot of the issues were that they didn't necessarily understand how their parents were feeling. And so drama therapy was very helpful for that, because they were able to step into the shoes of a parent that maybe they were having trouble understanding or relating to. So once the play was put together, and it ended up being just a beautiful collaboration of stories that had happened in their lives, of different roles that had taken place in their own families, and the relationships with other peers that had to do with being in a military family. So once this collaboration came about, several of the children were playing characters that were very similar to their parents and stepping into these other shoes and really getting a perspective that they hadn't gotten before. And when these kids were asked about it, they were really... the main thing that they had to say was, this was wonderful for connecting with people, and this is wonderful to be able to tell my parents these things that I'm feeling that I've never been able to tell them before. And I think that's where a lot of the therapy came in there. So I'll let Catherine talk a little bit more about drama therapy and the other aspects that she's worked with.
I'm kind of trying to hurry it along so we can get to you acting. It's going to be very fun. So, okay, I have done work with playback theater, which is a form of improvisational theater where you take stories from the audience and then play them back right there. So you get kind of it's seeing your experience acted out kind of changes how that experience was. Laura was in playback theater with me, and she experienced and saw a lot of that herself. I would have her talk, but like I said, we want to act today. I've also I go to Collins and Stolzer houses in Meadowlark and do work with people with dementia, which that's kind of gets into, I wanted to talk about kind of the science of drama therapy a little bit. Nothing is like, you know, for sure proven, but how we think it helps is what we're realizing now is that Descartes was completely wrong, and you need to have your body engaged so your mind can be engaged too. And actually, Sally also thinks it combines the two sides of the hemispheres, and especially like there's things called brain gym, where when you cross your hands over your body, the hemispheres of your brain are able to connect with each other. There's a very tiny little connection in there. So there's a lot of studies now. We're trying to get more and more clinical studies that talk about the connection between the brain and the body and how it can improve. So with people with dementia, what they find is that if they're able to talk and kind of engage their body, sometimes they will remember a little bit more. Sometimes they're you know, at the point where they're nonverbal, and so their body is the only way they can communicate. And sometimes it just cheers them up to have someone else looking directly in their eyes and talking to them and really wanting to be around them. So, and there's not a lot of programs at Meadowlark. Meadowlark has programs for the main office, nothing for the houses. So it's kind of, and they don't even have an activities director. So I kind of find that I would really like to make Meadowlark do a little bit more. And then this summer, I was in the Topeka Correctional Facility for women for 3 days every week, which is part of the reason I've just been exhausted this summer. But it was really valuable. We worked in maximum and minimum security prison. In minimum, I had my own group called Building Community Through Drama, and we got to do, like Monica said, role reversal. And we got to do role reversal between the inmates and the guards. And it was just really, really fun. And and even like the last day I was there, I just there was supposed to be a particularly not nice guard coming back, and we were doing a little rhythm exercise where we put words into it, and they kind of got into it, and one of them said, "She's gonna take your shoes. She's gonna take your shoes." It was very valuable. And then in maximum, it's actually more of a kind of a crafts project, because you don't want to trigger anything. Like, these are highly traumatized women and women who have a lot of heavy crimes on their list and a lot of stigmatization. So you don't want to open up something in prison that you cannot close, because then you send the inmate back into the population. And right. So there we did a lot of crafts. We did have a few dramatic things. We did a lot of guided meditation. We got to do some song list, and we did poetry, which was really surprising, because there was at least one woman who came in and said, "I cannot do poetry. I'm not going to write poetry. There's no way." And once we got her started, she'd come in with 15 poems a day that she wrote. Substance abuse problem there. Sometimes meth kind of gets you amped up about things, but it also was really good for the arts. So yeah, it was a really interesting summer experience, and it's definitely something I'd like to work with again. This fall, we have a lot of drama therapists in Stonehouse, which is where I'll be working with 3 to 5 year old children. It's kind of an odd transition, but not that odd, because all I'm doing, and you know, there's toddlers and infants, and they've really embraced drama therapy there and tried to get a drama therapist in every room at the Stonehouse to come in and kind of do work. And especially the role reversal is one of our most powerful objects, and the same goal in prison, which is to understand how someone else is feeling, is actually the same goal in preschool. You have to understand that this person has feelings too, and that I should get to understand how they feel, how they're feeling right now, and that you can kind of, you know, say, well, okay, would you like it if this happened to you? And you can say that experiencing it is really the best way. So when we start a drama therapy group, we usually start with a check-in. So right now, I would like everyone to kind of go inside right now and see how you are today. And today, our check-in is going to be weather. So we'll have a couple of people, once they come up with how they are, see what kind of weather you are today. Are you stormy? Has it been kind of a rough week? Are you sunny? Are you just really cheerful? Is there a rainbow, volcano, tsunami? What's going on? I'll give you a second. All right. Today, I'm all over the place. I'm where it's really cloudy, and sometimes it rains, and sometimes it's sunny. We've had a lot of that lately. How are you, Monica?
I am the calm immediately following the storm. Oh, I'm very still today.
Doesn't bode well for me today. So, do we have the microphone? So I'd like some, who knows what kind of weather they are and would like to share?
Partly cloudy. Large storm front. Looks like it's going to miss to the north.
Oh.
I'm a heat wave. I'm so hot it hurts.
I'm just the breeze blowing through the hammock in the shade on a summer day.
I'm not the sun, but I'm definitely with the sun today, and I'm in a field just really eating it up.
I'm a fog in the early morning, just as it starts to lift and the sun might break through.
I feel like it's, I don't know, there's no sun, but there's three moons, and it's cool, and a very dry breeze.
Well, nobody said this one yet. It's the galleons. You know, there's like a blue sky and then a flat line, but on top the clouds just keep moving and moving. You see it on the coast a lot more, but we see it here too.
Well, I'm looking forward to a good hot day. And the reason being, it's the last day for the swimming pool to be open.
I didn't know that. Thanks. I need to go. Okay, anyone else? Last call for weather. All right. So, for our next exercise, I'd like you to get a partner. So, and we may have to rearrange the chairs a little bit in here, but I'm sure we can do it kind of seated. Am I your partner? Yeah, Monica's going to be my partner. Who needs a part? Yes? You can have groups of three. It'll be a little more challenging. All right. Okay. So if you want to stand up and do this, you can stand up. If you want to turn in your chair, if you want to turn your chairs so they're facing each other, that would work too. Do we have someone who would help turn chairs if we need that? So this exercise is called mirroring. And it's very important for kind of understanding how the other person feels. So I'll kind of demonstrate with Monica first so you can see how it's done. You want to stand in front of the person and copy their movements exactly as you can. in your groups. A lot of good mirroring going on over here. Okay, so everyone who's still mirroring, kind of finish up whatever you're doing. But stay in your groups. We're going to have another one. So this next one, you're going to have lines. So just very short lines. For a group with three, you may have to switch off. So have two people go first and two people go next. So pick A and B again, or whoever is going to go. And A's line is going to be, "I want it." B's line is going to be, "You can't have it." So A will say, "I want it," and B will say, "You can't have it," and repeat it a couple of times, maybe 10 times. It's pretty good for this one. And you can say it in different ways. You can say it the same way, and go for it.
Thank you.
Okay. Now you're going to switch. And the two lines are going to be, "You can have it now, and I don't want it." Wasn't so painful. So let's leap right into kind of discussion. So you can ask me questions, but I do want to ask you what kind of came up while you were saying, while you heard those things. How did you feel hearing you can't have it when you wanted it? How did you feel hearing that they didn't want it when you were trying to give it to them?
I had the strong urge of wanting to say more, like, "Darn it, I told you."
And that's the next logical progression. If this were a drama therapy exercise, then we would let you say more. Then you would go, "No, I want to give this to you," and you would add more words to it, and it would get bigger and turn into a scene.
Mostly, I just felt like I'd had those conversations before.
I think I'm speaking for Jim, too, that we both felt like we would compromise in a situation like that and have alternative choices.
And that's really good. Actually, my supervisor at the prison worked on the four styles of argument resolution, the best one of which being collaboration is the best. Compromise, and then there's forcing. What was the last one? But conflict resolution is another big area.
I have a sister who's 16 months younger than I am, and we spent a lot of time together, And I remembered an occasion when there was a bowl to be licked, and we both wanted to do it. And I said, "Okay, you can have this one, then I'll have the next one." And she said, "I'll have this one, and then we'll see about the next one."
I want to say how grateful I am that Catherine participates in Stolzer House, where my mother is, and she's absolutely wonderful. And there really are no activities in the dementia units, and I guess the other households, for people who have no voice for themselves. And it was like having an angel appear, and I'm so grateful.
Well, and this is a good opportunity to tell everyone, even if you don't have someone in Collins or Stolzer and you just feel like writing a letter someday, to really bother Meadowlark Hills about that. Because there should be an activities director, there should be therapists, activities, like they watch television all day. it's ridiculous.
There is an activity that's directed for the people who are not in those of houses. But a big part of the problem up there is, of course, financing.
Yeah.
You know, like everywhere else, they've had to cut back on staff.
Yeah. Of course, I also do work at Stony Brook, and they're a little bit, they have an activities director and somehow make it work, but yeah, it's still financing. They still need more money.
I live in Meadowlark. I'm in the independent living sections, and we have more than we can do. I mean, we're just full of activities and concerts and lectures and so many things. But I don't know about the other buildings. I've wondered how. I know we have a lot of Alzheimer's people and dementia in other buildings that we don't really see. So they probably do need more activity or more educated and informed people there to help them.
And Sally does acting for fun, if you see that on the list. That's my advisor at Meadowlark Hills for independent living. So acting for fun, I did that one year, and we put on a puppet show for kids and stuff. And, yeah, they have amazing activities there. I just don't see why it can't go into the assisted living homes, too.
I'm glad to see that you're thinking or pushing about this, because this is something I've been thinking about. We have several friends who are in the section, and I saw her slowly withdraw, and there really wasn't any activity for them. And I think that we need to catch them before they completely disappear into themselves. And there needs to be activity, book reviews, games, exercise. I know someone has said that they worked there and they did have an afternoon when they played with the ball. But they need to be not only the activity for the body, but also for the mind. And I've been thinking along these lines, and I'm very glad to see that you're pushing, and I'll join in the pushing.
All right, good. Well, yeah, and the CNAs do everything that they can. They've basically been put in charge of it. Instead of an activities director, it's CNAs, you handle it. So they do what they can, and they'll, like, sing hymns, and they'll have balloons. They do a lot of balloons, which are really fun. But there needs to be more.
Stephen Mall, my father was in the dementia ward in Cleveland, and I went to visit him one time, and I took piano music and just played for him, and he just kind of woke up, and he just started saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It just kept going on. So it was really very touching.
Thank you.
But my other idea is you could do a mixer, and then the next day, you could do a mixer. And the next day, you could, okay.
There is kind of a, you know, if I mess up, they are going to forgive me as long as I show up. If I don't show up, though, everyone in the dementia unit remembers, and they'll say, where were you? So, so one thing they remember. Okay,
my mother lives at Epworth Villa in Oklahoma City, and their dementia ward and then also their long-term care have very extensive activities programs, and a lot of it can be done, shall I say, on the cheap, that they can bring in people who have pet therapy dogs. I mean, you can schedule a lot of programs that people will volunteer to come in and do things. You can fill their day. If you had an activities director, you could do it. Mm-hmm. So I commend you, and I won't move my mother from Oklahoma City up here just because she gets so much better care in Oklahoma City. And you can look up Epworth Villa's website, and the woman who's sort of responsible for this wonderful program is named Lisa Peaver. Thank you.
I was thinking also, because this is a college town, if there is someone to coordinate these sorts of things, there are so many people in different departments, especially in dance. I know you do some dance stuff over at
Stony Brook.
Yeah. And especially in dance departments and theater departments and art departments, that have these needs to intern somewhere or get volunteer hours. And so I think the main issue is the coordination of being able to get those people in. We've got all of these hands with skills that can offer to someone if they've got somebody to coordinate it. Mm-hmm.
I've lived there 8 years, maybe, and when Steve, did you get acquainted with Steve Shields, who was the CEO, and he goes around the world. I mean, I think Finland or some country came over here and saw a meadowlark, and they thought it was such a super system, and so we've heard nothing but praise. Now we're having a lot of transition of both higher staff and the regular staff. A lot of different faces are new to us and names, but I'm surprised that you would find it to be criticized. I have wondered when I've been over at Roten House. Have you been there, Roten?
No.
Or Bramlage? Anyway, I have wondered if they're bored or if they want to be left alone or how much they want.
Yeah.
So I don't know that.
Yeah, and it could just be a case of they've just kind of forgotten that these don't, because I mean, I think most people, they're kind of expected to bring them to the main facility for activities. So they may think main facility activities, they're able to get up there. But if you're going to bring someone from Stolzer or Collins up there, they have to have a nurse accompanying them, and they just don't have the staff to do it. So.
I think all your programs sound really exciting. And I'd just like to ask, could you put your contact information, maybe send something out on the listserv, as well as the programs
Absolutely.
That you're running and which programs you need help with and what you need?
And you can always talk to me. I have plenty of space in all of my programs for help. I haven't had any in the last. So, okay, it is the end of the day. So I'm going to teach you a quick hymn. It's a song we sing at the end of playback a lot. So I'll sing a line, and then you can sing it back. Up above my head, I hear music in the air.
I hear music in the air.
Up above my head,
I hear music in the air.
Up above my head,
I hear music in the air.
And I know, and I know, there is healing somewhere.
And I know, and I know, there is healing somewhere.
All right, so we'll sing it all the way through once like that, and then we'll change out some words.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air.
Am I hurting the problem?
And I know, there is healing in the air. Now with peace, up above my head, I hear peace in the air. Up above my head, I hear peace in the air. Up above my head,
I hear peace in the air.
And I know, there is healing somewhere.
What next? Now I need your help. What else do we hear up in the air?
Joy. Up above my head, I hear joy in the air. Up above my head, I hear joy in the air. Up above my head, I hear joy in the air. And I know, there is healing somewhere. Up above my head, I hear love in the air. Up above my head, I hear love in the air. Up above my head, I hear love in the air. And I know, and I know, there is healing somewhere. One more. Up above my head, I hear laughter in the air. Up above my head, I hear laughter in the air. Up above my head, I hear laughter in the air. And I know, and I know, there's healing somewhere. Thank you.
You can take it now.
I want to thank you, Monica and Catherine. That was just lovely. And our closing words by William H. Auden. Healing, Papa would tell me, is not a science, but the intuitive art of wooing nature. Thank you.